like a very weird song. Da, 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 da.
It feels like it should be in like a lyrical line in a Sondheim musical.
I would watch that Sondheim musical.
Of course you would. It's a Sondheim musical.
Anomaly Supplemental. Lyrics and songs by Stephen Sondheim.
That'll definitely happen.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. This is Casey. The Talking Dead is set in the same world as The Walking Dead, where the upper crust laugh at the poor saps outside. And I am an anomaly.
And I'm Sue. I like to play Animal Crossing, where my town is named Risa, and I built a holodeck in my basement. And I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast. Da, 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 da.
Sure.
What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about the Terry Pratchett Discworld novel, Guards, Guards.
Yay. More importantly, it is my first time reading any Pratchett whatsoever.
You haven't read Good Omens?
Okay, I don't really count that because it's not set in Discworld. It's not one of Terry Pratchett's own works. It's kind of like Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. It's kind of not like Neil Pratchett or Terry Gaiman.
I think Good Omens is really interesting because I feel like you hear both of their voices.
Right,
but they still work together, but like you can, it almost feels like, oh, that's a Pratchett part and that's a Gaiman part, and they just fit well together. But yeah, when he didn't work with Neil Gaiman, he wasn't just writing Discworld. There are non-Discworld books, but it is definitely what he wrote the most of, for sure.
Bookstore. There were tons of them.
Yeah. Yeah, with one more to come.
I can't read that many books in a year.
And some of those are things that are like additional content. There's like a later book where a children's book is mentioned, and he also wrote the children's book. And there are four different maps of the Discworld. I think it's four. Ankh-Morpork, Lanker, Death's Domain. Maybe there's only three. I can't remember what the fourth one was. But those people count as part of the books. Nanny Ogg, one of the witches, wrote a cookbook, right? So that's one of the books. They're not all novels, but they're all content. And they're all on my shelf.
So, kind of segueing into the What You've Been Doing segment, this is most of what I have been doing. I have been reading this book. And funny enough, I discovered that I have the mass market paperback, but it was really hard for me to stay up at night reading it. So what I did was I downloaded the ebook from the library and I set it to really big font, and I was able to just go through it like nobody's business. So I may be an ebook person in some regards, as long as I can make the font really big and be like, oh, I can read all of this and not have to stare at tiny text. But anyway, going back to what I've been doing recently, I saw Inside Out on Friday.
And would you recommend it?
Hells yeah! It's funny because it's all about a girl's feelings. And more importantly, it's about the friendship between two female characters. That being Joy, played by Amy Poehler, and Sadness, played by Phyllis Smith, who people may know as Phyllis from The Office. And, of course, Lewis Black, the comedian, plays Anger. Did not know that. Really good casting.
And that's pretty much always the case with Pixar, is really good casting.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you would like to recommend?
You know me, my entire life right now is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell all the time. All the time, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. And of course, I'm liking Bertie Carvel's face so much.
Bertie Carvel is an amazing actor. I know, I think we talked about it on the last podcast, but he's an amazing actor.
Yeah, but I'm looking for other things that he's done. And right before we started recording, I was able to get my hands on the first episode of Babylon, which was directed by Danny Boyle, who is an Oscar-winning director. And he, that being Bertie Carvel, plays an asshole in it, and I love him. Love him.
So, the day after we last recorded was my big Into the Woods day.
Woo! How did it go?
Oh, it was so great. It was the original cast reunion with James Lapine and Stephen Sondheim. It was sort of like a discussion moderated by Mo Rocca, so add that to the mix. Mm-hmm. And they performed songs from Into the Woods in there. I went to both the 2 o'clock and the 7 o'clock. Surprise. But I got to see Joanna Gleason sing Moments in the Woods twice in the same day, and Bernadette Peters sing It's the Last Midnight twice in the same day. And it was pretty much the best day ever.
Yeah.
Pretty much the best day ever. They even talked a little bit about the movie and kind of picked on it, which I will actually save because we are planning to talk about it later this summer. Since we have talked about the show, we done podcasted on Into the Woods, in case you missed it. But we are planning to do kind of a stage-to-screen comparison. Mm-hmm. So the little bit that I took from that live event, I will save for then.
Right.
Other than that, I have, again, like you, read through Guards. I finished The Evolution of Calpurnia Tate.
Oh, which, how's that? That's on my to-read list.
It is really nice.
Okay.
it's not a sci-fi book. It's not a genre book, really, at all. But it is, you know, about a young girl around the turn of the century who has this interest in science, and she's sort of, her grandfather is encouraging that, but her mother is kind of discouraging that and wanting her to be, you know, a lady, in the sense of she wants her to be a debutante, essentially, and get married, and wants her to study piano and make lace, and she wants to study bugs and name plants. And the ending is left a little bit up for debate or interpretation. So it's nice. That's like, it wasn't groundbreaking, but it was a very different thing to read in a YA period novel.
It loosely sounds like Arcadia, the themes behind Arcadia by Tom Stoppard.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Which I've been meaning to write a little blog post on, like nerd theater and stuff. But of course, my life is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Right.
As it should be. Also, now that I'm done reading Guards, I have picked up Gail Carriger's latest book, Prudence, which is a continuation of her previous series, The Parasol Protectorate. And I'm very excited because I really like her writing. She's steampunk, she's comedy, she's supernatural in her genre. And also she has a blog about vintage clothing, so it's hard not to like her. I may write a review for Prudence as soon as I'm finished with it.
Write all the things!
So much writing, and I'm also writing my own stuff, finally, again. But again, all my life is like Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
We are, I know we say it at the end of the podcast every week, but we really are writing a lot more on the Anomaly Podcast blog. There is a lot more content there than there has been for a really long time. And I mean several posts a week. So if you want more recommendations or reviews or tutorials or episode recaps, head over to anomalypodcast.com and check out the blog.
Isn't it?
A lot of different people are writing now too, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that helps, is that we now have a group of people, and it's not just Sue, Angela, and I doing everything. We have a large group of people who are interested in various and different things. For example, I don't think I could have written the Rise of the Geek Bars post that Sith Gin did, which was awesome because I like drinking at home.
Transition.
Okay, so either go into detail about what Discworld is or a basic intro, or give a book summary. You can pick any order you want to.
How about a podcast outline first? We're going to talk general terms and then sound a spoiler alert and go into detail.
Okay.
Even though we were published, this book was published in 1989, for people who haven't read it, do spoiler warnings last longer for books?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, so to introduce the Discworld. The Discworld, of course, series written by Terry Pratchett, who passed away this past spring, and is a flat disc balanced on the backs of four elephants, which stand on the back of a giant turtle that swims through space. The sun orbits the turtle, or maybe just orbits the disk. I'm not really sure on the physics of that. But sunlight moves slowly because there is a magical field around the Discworld. So sunlight or light kind of flows over mountains, and there are places that it doesn't reach or get into. It's kind of beautifully described when he goes into that. But the books themselves, each one tends to parody or take inspiration from something specific out of Tolkien or Lovecraft or Shakespeare or even general mythology or folklore or fairy tales. And it is always satirizing something, even if it's the folktale itself, to anything that might parallel stuff that's going on with current culture or political or scientific issues of the time. Does that sum it up? I feel like I'm being very serious.
It sounds good to me.
So Discworld isn't a series in the sense that, like, The Song of Ice and Fire is a series. They're not sequential in that way. Things certainly do happen in an order, of course, and later published books sometimes reference earlier books. But you can pick up any book and read it, and it's a self-contained story. You might see some things happen out of order. Characters might have a different relationship in one book than another, but you'll just have to deal with that. But it's not like there's anything necessarily heavy plot-based that you're going to miss out on if you do read them out of order. There are also several different sub-series, if you will, to the Discworld. There are books that focus on the Night Watch, like the Guards books, or Guards. There are witches, there's a series on death, there's Rincewind and the Wizards, there's a series on essentially improvements in Ankh-Morpork, the main city that's kind of like a conglomeration of London and New York and any big city, really. There are a few standalone books, and then there are the Tiffany Aching books. Tiffany is a young witch, and her books start out being children's books, then move into YA, and the last book, which is actually the last book that will ever be published in the Discworld, according to Rihanna, Terry Pratchett's daughter, is going to be a, not adult book, but not a YA book, like a regular novel. So it was specifically intended to have her grow up with the reader and bring people into the larger world that is the Discworld.
Like Harry Potter.
Right. Except
not Harry Potter.
Except this started first.
Suck it, J.K. Rowling.
Just saying. I feel like I sounded so weird and academic during that time.
Well, you've basically been studying Pratchett for years. I'm the one who's going to be like, this is a good book. Remember.
Full disclosure, this was Casey's idea.
It really was. I honestly wanted an excuse to read Terry Pratchett, and because he had passed away earlier this year and he was so important to Sue, and Sue has been telling me to read Pratchett for so long that I finally said, all right, what two books do I have on my shelf that are by Terry Pratchett? And it was Small Gods and Guards Guards. And when I brought it up to Sue, she said, let's start with Guards Guards because it's the beginning of one of the sub-series. And I guess, I think you said that the themes were a little bit lighter to handle, I guess?
Small Gods, which is also an excellent book. I mean, I think they're all excellent. Parodies religion. So I think sometimes that Guards Guards, it might be a little bit easier to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an excellent entry point. A lot of people recommend Guards Guards as an entry point to the series. And a lot of people also consider the Night Watch books to be the best. A lot of people like them. They're the favorite subseries. I get it. I think they have some of the best stories, but I personally still have a soft spot for The Witches.
Because that was your first book.
Yes. And because of the characters. Because you've got, you know, three different incredibly strong women who are, who just like in Guards Guards, the characters take the stereotypes and turn them on their heads. And I just love Granny Weatherwax to death.
Don't know whether to start with the next Guards Guards book or Night Watch book or to go to The Witches or to read Small Gods. I should probably read Small Gods since it's on my shelf.
So reading order in the Discworld is something that is oft discussed. There are lots of ways to do it. Some people say pick a series and read straight through the series. Some people say read in publication order. What I did, because I was handed Witches book number 2, actually, Weird Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I read that one. I went back and read Witches number 1. Then I read the rest of The Witches. So all of my Witches reading to that point that had been published was very concentrated. And then I went back to the beginning and read everything else in publication order. So I kind of did both. I think that, assuming you want to read more, I think you mm-hmm. do, I would say go with what you already have and then see what comes in first. Since you have a familiarity with these characters now, you might mm-hmm. want to stay with the guards.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
But really, you can, it's all personal. You can do anything that you want to do. If you get sick of guards, you can go to any other, you can go and read some death books and you can meet Susan Stohella, Death's granddaughter. Or you can go and, actually, you might want to read Masquerade, is a witch's book where they have to go deal with somebody who's being a phantom in an opera house.
I'm on it. Cool.
So Masquerade is making fun of theater in general and the Phantom of Opera specifically. Phantom of the Opera specifically. So, yeah, I mean, you can look for what you want to be made fun of. It's, I also think that you in particular would really like a Monstrous Regiment, which is about the women disguising themselves as men and joining the Discworld armies.
Oh yeah. You told me about that book.
Yeah. So typically what I do when I'm recommending Discworld is I try and take the interest of the person I'm talking to and do exactly this. This is what I think you should read. And that, therefore, it's different for every person, which is kind of difficult when you're trying to recommend it to a large group of people. You know, I'm doing a lot of talking.
That's okay.
So Casey said to me one of the best reviews that I think a book can get. Mm-hmm. I get a Facebook message that says, all I want to do is go home and read more Guards Guards.
It's true.
I basically did a victory dance. I won!
I'm a winner! Yeah, I really enjoyed this book. Mind you, comedy is so hard to write, especially in a genre setting. There was, I think Angela may have mentioned this in an older anomaly that may be in the archive, but it's called, like, the Myth series, like, Robert Asprin. They're by Robert Asprin. I tried to read those, could not get into them, because it was humor related to our world, not necessarily the one they were in. Like, they were making references to Earth culture in a fantasy setting, and I'm like, that's not correct. You know, I love Hitchhiker's Guide. Hitchhiker's Guide is also one of my absolute favorite books, right next to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, as well as Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. I have a varied interest in what I read. And I'm also a comedy fan, but it's so hard to write that I'm also very critical of the books I pick up. So when I started reading Guards, one of the first things I ended up doing was laughing. And that was pretty much happening on again and off again throughout the book. So that's probably the best review I have for it.
Yay.
It's legit funny.
Would you like to give a summary? Would you like to read the back cover text that's in the
I
document?
I will read the back cover text. Because I would say, here's a dragon. Here there be dragons. And the denizens of Ankh-Morpork wish one huge fire breather would return from whence it came. Long believed extinct, a superb specimen of Draco Nobilis, noble dragon for those who don't understand italics, has appeared in Discworld's greatest city. Not only does this unwelcome visitor have a nasty habit of charbroiling everything in its path, in rather short order, it is crowned king. It is a noble dragon, after all. Meanwhile, back at Unseen University, an ancient and long-forgotten volume, The Summoning of Dragons, is missing from the library's shelves. To the rescue come Captain Vimes, Lance Constable Carrot, and the rest of the Night Watch who, along with other brave citizens, risk everything, including a good roasting, to dethrone the flying monarch and restore order to Ankh-Morpork before it's burned to a crisp. That was difficult to read.
Yeah, they're not super easily written. I think that happens with back cover text sometimes. So, originally published in 1989, 8th Discworld book, first City Watch book, and it has been adapted several times. There's been a BBC radio play, there's been an audio play that's a different adaptation that was actually performed at Dragon Con a couple years ago. There have been a few stage productions. One of the scripts is published as a book. There has been a graphic novel and a board game, and even a video game that was much more loosely based on this novel. Apparently, it replaces one of the main characters with a different main character from Discworld.
What?
Yeah, I'm not... Knowing who that is, based on where I found it out, I'm not sure how that would work. But that's why I include the word loosely.
I'm very interested in seeing a stage production now. I think that maybe have to be added to my nerd theater future blog post.
Several of Pratchett's works have been turned into stage productions.
That's starting to happen with some Neil Gaiman stuff, too.
People want to live it, I guess.
We ya. Spoilers.
What?
These books are from your future. You don't want to read ahead, spoil all the surprises. Not peeking at the end.
Isn't travelling with you one big spoiler?
I try to keep you away from major plot developments. Which, to be honest, I seem to be very bad at.
So it was your first time through. I think you should talk about your thoughts on the book. Because I think, you know, based on my ramblings, everybody knows my thoughts on the book.
Well, to be honest, I was very careful not to look anything up about Discworld because I really did want to be super fresh on this, not really know anything about anybody or anything. I will admit that I've seen a little part of The Hogfather on Netflix. So I knew who Death was because Christopher Lee's voice as Death is in my head. And I know that he has a horse named Binky, and I don't know why. Kevin insists that it's funny.
It is funny. Death's horse is named Binky? I mean, come on.
Look, he was talking about the reason behind the horse being named Binky. I recognize that having a horse named Binky in general is hilarious. My dad had a horse named Pokey just a few months ago.
That's adorable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of my favorite parts about the book at the very beginning was the introduction of the secret brotherhood, where one of them is trying to go through the portals and they're just like, not this one, you're at the wrong one. And then he has to look for the other portal. And the, it sounds so strange trying to describe this, but just the interaction between the entire brotherhood as well as the rest of the characters was so much like Monty Python in my head that I'm, to kind of help me visualize things, I kind of cast certain actors in in books, and everyone was just John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Michael Palin at various stages of their lives.
I think the style that the Pratchett writes dialogue in is really helpful for that, because it's not just said or mumbled. And a lot of it's real. Like, there are descriptions of one character who's just complaining throughout all these, like, corrections he's been given. You want to do this, you say. And it just keeps popping up for pages. And it's hilarious. And real. You know?
It really is kind of like if a Monty Python movie had a very clear plot. Everyone has a very distinct voice in this, and it was so funny. And there's like some adult humor in there, like the main character Carrot unknowingly stays at a brothel, and they're just like, you sleep there
every night.
It fills my little heart with joy, and he's just so oblivious to it. And he makes a friend named Reet, who we haven't really met in the book, but just the fact that he's made friends or is possibly courting a lady of the night fills me with such happiness.
That is one thing about this book that actually I didn't even think about it until Oren pointed it out, was that taken by itself, Guards is kind of lacking in gender representation.
Yeah.
More than kind of, it definitely is. And his comment, him bringing that up, actually set my brain all wonky to the point where we chatted about it on Facebook for like a couple hours. I'm not sure if it's because, you know, my first time through Discworld started 12 years ago, because I certainly, you know, was looking at my media with different lenses at that time, being less informed about many things, or because I started with the witches and I had so much of it. I think I also tend to view the characters of Discworld as a whole. Like, when I think about them, I think about all of them across all of the books. And when you look at it that way, it's not an issue. But in this, in these 350 or so pages, it is. Because there's only one woman who actually says anything other than the dragon, who turns out to be a woman or female, I guess, because it's a dragon, whatever. But she happens to be awesome. This is the one woman in this book. She's the best, but she's still the only one.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of okay with it. I mean, yes, this is very much a sausage party character book, but at the same time, Lady Sybil is a boss. And going back to my little casting thing, right before we started recording, I'm like, who was I picturing as Lady Sybil? Who was I picturing? You know who I pictured? Catherine Tate.
Okay.
I pictured Catherine Tate. In my head, I know she would pull off the comedy and you could make her look ginormous. Not like, you know, like a giant, like a 6-foot woman.
I'm very okay with this.
Yeah.
Because this is also the Discworld character I am planning to cosplay this year at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
Apparently, I just want to do everything Catherine Tate would do.
There's no problem with it. I mean, the only other person I could picture was Meryl Streep as Julia Child. And I'm like, no, Catherine Tate. Catherine Tate. And in my head, Carrot was one of the Hemsworths. Either Liam or Chris, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, this one, for the most part, is turning the traditional fairy tale, essentially, on its head. You know, mm-hmm. A dragon threatens the city. What do you expect? You expect the long-lost heir to the throne to show up and kill the dragon and to marry the princess. Well, there is no princess, and towards the end of the book, and kind of throughout, it is heavily implied that Lance Constable Carrot would be that long-lost heir to the throne, mm-hmm. having been, you know, raised by dwarves after a cart was set aflame, and there's this strange sword that he has, and people just do what he says because he says it. But he's happy in the watch. The dragon goes off to make new dragons with Errol, and it just, it's all slightly off kilter, and I think that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, and I love Errol.
And the jokes are about the expectations that he knows you're going to have.
Yeah. Yeah, you can kind of see the satirical moments of this book. Pratchett's tone is very clear. Everything he talks about in terms of politics and the monarchy. I remember Sergeant Colin was basically making a big deal out of finding out that his wife was a monarchist. And he's just like, my life is ruined! I think two of my favorite characters are the non-speaking ones, which are Errol, whose name used to be Good Boy Biddy Featherstone or something like that, and the Librarian.
Yeah, the Librarian is an amazing character. An amazing character.
I love the Librarian. Only thing he says is ook and eek, but his character is so clear. And I love him.
And so intelligent.
Yes. Also, does not take your when you call him a monkey.
In case you listened thus far and did not read the book, the librarian at the Unseen University is an orangutan.
Yes. One of the many reasons why I love him.
And Errol is a little swamp dragon.
Also why I love him.
Lady Sybil is essentially a cat lady, but with dragons.
That's true.
And that's a lot of why I love her.
Although, that being said, Errol is a lot like Barky. When Barky was a puppy, he ate everything. Barky used to eat rocks.
Did he propel himself by, quote, flaming backwards?
Sadly, no. That was probably the part of the book that got me, like, the hardest. Nothing is funnier than a good fart joke. They never use the word fart. But Errol is pooting all throughout the city. Like a little rocket.
I love it. I also want to point people to, I don't want to go through them all because it's a ridiculously long list, but I want to point people to a website called the Annotated Pratchett File. And it hasn't been updated in several years, but it is an amazing resource if you're interested in this kind of thing, where people go through and they have pointed out a bunch of the anachronisms and the references and just made an annotated list for all of the novels up to, oh, one of the more recent ones. Even Raising Taxes is on here, and that's not that long ago. Oh, but it's marked as being in the planning stages only. That's funny. The last date says 2008, but seeing as many of these books were published before 2008, there's a lot of stuff on there. I will link to it in the show notes. My favorite part, maybe, is that it is lspace.org is the domain name. And if you were paying attention, lspace is the library space that the librarian enters to find the time-travel-y copy of The Summoning of Dragons to figure out who stole it. So it's amazing. The lspace connects all libraries across space and time, which I think is just an amazing and beautiful concept. And then mm-hmm. he goes off onto these I don't know, they're not stories about them, but paragraphs on people who own used bookstores and why they seem to never end and are twisty and kind of weird in space because books have meaning and that kind of meaning can distort reality. And it's just, it's so lovely and smart.
I think I really liked that bit too. Speaking of annotations, the footnotes of this book are fantastic. I am usually not a fan of footnotes, and unfortunately, because I was reading the ebook, I wasn't able to flip through the footnotes as easily as I was in my paper copy, which was the only down point of reading the ebook. But just the little notes down at the bottom, kind of further explaining the world and also just making a pithy joke or two.
Yeah, the footnotes are almost always additional jokes, but you definitely need to read them as they come up.
Mm-hmm. Love them. They were one of my favorite parts of the books. I'm not a big fan of footnotes in nonfiction, strangely enough. I think it kind of gets in my way. But in genre fiction, I feel like it develops the world even more. Like, I'm going to keep bringing this up. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell has a bunch of footnotes in it. And that's one of the reasons why I have a copy with me rather than listening to the audiobook when I was first going through it.
So other than the characters we've spoken about, which are solely pretty much Lady Sybil and anthropomorphic animals, what did you think about the characters and the characterizations?
I thought they were very interesting. Again, I was imagining all of the Monty Python characters in there because through Terry Pratchett's intelligence, these dumb characters were saying very bright things. Well, not dumb, but kind of aloof, I guess. It's better to say aloof. There was also, I listened to the panel about Terry Pratchett, and there was a little bit of anger that you mentioned in that podcast coming out of some of the characters.
Yeah, Vine, and that voice, that anger, definitely gets stronger as the series goes on. And as, you know, because again, this was 25, 26 years ago that this book was published. And so the more recent stuff, that you can definitely see it a lot more, especially, I think, when you get into the books that aren't just satirizing other stories and fairy tales and expectations, but are satirizing things that we're dealing with currently in our world, you know?
Yeah, and comedy has kind of a punk edge to it, because if you're angry about something, you make fun of it. And you see that in a lot of comedy groups. You see it in stand-up, and you see it in this book. I mean, the Night Watch kind of serves as the angry voice, especially Vimes. I loved everything Vimes said in this book.
Vimes has become, like, I mean, I'm sure it's not surprising, basically an iconic character of this series. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas the first one I think of is Granny Weatherwax. The first one most people think of is Sam Vimes.
When he's not fall down drunk, he is he is super sober, and he is completely aware of everything that's going on around him, and it pisses him off.
I think he's a lot more perceptive than we're led to believe, at least in his initial description.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just love that there's his whole internal rant about wearing plumes in his helmet, because if you put a plume in your helmet, it's a signal that you've been bought. It's so interesting.
I love how opinionated he is. And more importantly, I love how much he loves Errol.
He does love Errol.
He loves Errol
it's
so
adorable.
Much.
Adorable.
They're like besties. I love reading about pet owners and their pets. And I thought it was very interesting, the dynamic that the highborn Lady Sybil, totally into Vimes, and vice versa.
Totally into Vimes.
Yeah. I think one of the lines at the very end was, he's on a surprise date with her. Which has happened to me, not romantic. Do not pull surprise dates. I think what it says in the narration was that she couldn't do any worse and he couldn't do any better.
Pretty much, and it evened out. Well, I feel like we can't talk about a Discworld book without bringing up the somewhat annoying discussion of cover art.
The cover art's bad.
Let's clarify. The cover art on the American HarperCollins paperback from a year that I can't find, the green one, is terrible.
It's bad.
The printing in my hands is August 2001. It's got one dragon on the front and this weird little book line. And the mass market paperbacks that were all printed around the same time, I have like a good 20 of these because it's what you could get in paperback form that are all the same style, where there's like this iconic image in the middle on the front and this color and these fonts and the little tiny icons down the spine. It's just, they're bad. They're bad. When I finally got up to the... to reading them as they were published, I started ordering my Pratchett books from the UK so I could have the good cover art. The most well-known cover in the UK is by an artist named Josh Kirby, who did most, if not all, of the covers for a very long time. That did change at some point because I believe he passed away. But it is the cover, the UK cover, is a lot more, I would say, old school fantasy.
Mm-hmm. It looks like an illustration from the book.
Right. Nobody really knows for sure, at least not that I'm aware of, but the general belief is that the US publishers, because they're different publishers in the US and the UK, feel that that type of cover art is too cartoony for American audiences. So they don't think Americans will pick up a book with that cover because it looks cartoony. I don't know, we even know why cartoony is bad. Does that mean young or juvenile? Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. As I said, I go out of my way to get the UK covers. So.
Yeah.
When I went to London in 2005, I came back with an entire suitcase full of Terry Pratchett books. And that is not an exaggeration.
Yep. I believe it.
And Terry Pratchett happened to be on my plane back into JFK. And I did not know it until I saw him leaving baggage claim. And my friend would not let me run after him. Which is probably a good thing.
You give people their space, just like you gave F. Murray Abraham his space.
Yes, Josh.
And you do
Kirby.
Have a signed copy.
I have several signed copies. I met him in controlled locations, such as conventions or book signings several times. So there was really no need to run after him. It was just sort of like, you know, long flight, very tired. I have a suitcase full of your books waiting to come through the baggage carousel, you know.
That's not creepy. That's not creepy.
Not creepy at all. But yeah, Josh Kirby passed away in the fall of 2001. So he did quite a lot of the Discworld cover art through that point or very close to that point. There is also another amazing Discworld artist, Paul Kidby, who has a fantastic style. And there is a whole book of his illustrations that is just The Art of Discworld. And sometimes I just look at it because it's amazing. And it makes me sad that the U.S. mass market paperback art is so unfortunate. And they did another printing recently, and the covers are just black. And the Guards one is like a police helmet. You know, the kind that Vimes is described as wearing on black. Like, it's the worst. And, like, Josh Kirby's art is so distinctive, I think, because he worked almost exclusively in oils and really painted these covers. He didn't draw them. He painted them. I don't know. That I think that's just part of the appeal to me, and I don't know why. Why wouldn't the U.S. use them? I think someone else has posited that there was a rights issue And it wasn't just Americans won't like this. But I don't know the full story. I don't claim to know the full story. I just want the art.
Which is why you continue to go to the UK to buy your things.
Yeah.
There was supposed to be a Nightwatch TV series, right? I read that somewhere.
Yeah, that has been going on for a couple of years. There is... It's supposed to be called The Watch. It is being produced in the UK. Thank goodness, not in the US.
Yeah.
It was announced as back in 2011. And there hasn't been a whole lot of information forthcoming. Terry Pratchett's daughter, Rihanna, again, is involved. So she, I believe, would be helping to keep it on track. Sort of, it's always good to have somebody there watching over, right? According to Wikipedia, back in September of last year, 2014, Terry Pratchett's agent said that the scripts were in development for 13 60-minute episodes, and that filming would begin in 2015. That is the most recent information that we have. So I would love there to be more. I would love for this to happen. I would love to see this world on TV done well. And I think that's the most important part, is the done well.
How many adaptations have there been of Terry Pratchett's works? And in your opinion, how many of them have done decently?
Do you mean like TV movie adaptations or adaptations as a whole? Because I certainly have not seen everything.
Just the things that you've seen. So let's say TV adaptations for the most part.
I mean, I unabashedly love Weird Sisters. So that is probably my favorite. I mean, to be 100% real, I don't think any of them are super wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy that they exist. It's kind of more what it's about. And I love seeing those characters being brought to life somewhere that more people might find them. You know, somebody might be browsing Netflix and be like, Hogfather, what is that? And watch it and become interested in the series. So it's kind of like my conclusion in the reboots podcast we did. I am all about things existing to bring people back to the source material.
But that doesn't mean you have to like them.
Or love them or think they're wonderful.
Right. Good to know. Good to know.
When you try and take a 300, 400, 500 page book and make it a 2-hour movie, you have to cut stuff. And that always makes the book lover annoyed. So no adaptation is going to be perfect.
Yeah, definitely not. That's why you should really look to honoring the tone of the book, as well as the characters, more so than honoring the strict plot points. Clark Gregg, who plays Agent Phil Coulson, is also a screenwriter and a director. And he adapted Chuck Palahniuk's book, Choke. And he once had this story that he tried to do it word for word. And it was just dead weight. And it was a really thick screenplay. And eventually what he had to do was put the book away for a while and then come back and write it. And the same thing happened with the same people who wrote the movie The Descendants. They tried to do an exact adaptation, and it was like 700 pages long of screenplay. And producers were just like, can't do that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really boring movie. Which is why I think with series of books, it would work better as a TV series. Especially,
there's no information here about if they're taking specific books, specific stories that were told in the Watch books and translating them. But I agree. I think a miniseries, or in this case, full series, I guess, with 13 episodes is the right move if you're trying to tell this kind of story. And I'm also really, really happy that it is, if it is even still happening, is being produced by a British television company, because the Brits are not afraid to end something when it's done.
Yeah.
if Americans have a show with high ratings, they just keep making the show, even if there's no story left to tell.
Yeah.
And that is a problem. I also want to point people towards The Color of Magic, which has Sean Astin in it, who I know is a favorite among Anomaly Podcast. It is, the Color of Magic and the Light Fantastic are the first two books in the Discworld series, and they're very different from the rest of the books. They have a different tone, and a different feeling, and that's why even a lot of Discworld fans suggest not starting with those two. They want you to get a taste of the world before going back and reading those two books. But he does this character, and in terms of honoring the tone, does it so well. He plays Twoflower, who is basically a tourist in the big city. You know, and it's so well done. Even though the source material is not my favorite of the Discworld books, it's mm-hmm. it's still something to check out. Does that even make sense? Am I just rambling at this point?
No, it makes sense.
I'm going to put a lot of links in the show notes. I'm going to link to L-Space, to annotations, and to quotes. I'm going to link mm-hmm. to Josh Kirby's art, as well as Paul Kidby's art.
Mm-hmm. Did we already talk about favorite parts of the book that we liked?
We talked about favorite parts of the book in terms of just talking through the book. Mm-hmm. Do you have more that you want to mention?
I have a favorite line somewhere.
Yes.
If there was anything that depressed him more than his own cynicism, it was that quite often it still wasn't as cynical as real life.
Yeah, that's pretty great. We talked about the bigger description of this earlier, but I really love the line, "A good bookshop is just a genteel black hole that knows how to read."
Let's see. There's also one that the patrician had who, I wasn't a big fan of his character, but he has a very good line of dialogue, which was, "Never build a dungeon you wouldn't be happy to spend the night in yourself. The world would be a happier place if more people remembered that."
I'm not sure if it was Nobby or Colin or both, but their inability to get the subject correct when telling someone that they were history. "Your geography!" It's so wonderful. And it's that kind of humor that's, like, it's ridiculous, but it's still hilarious.
This is a good book. This is a good book, you guys.
So, Casey, are you going to read more Discworld?
Yes.
Yay! That was my goal all along.
You did the thing!
I did the thing! I also did the thing in the sense that I got Michelle, Anomaly staffer Michelle, to read this as well. Yay! And she wrote a review that I want to read on her book Tumblr. She's at ultrabookgeek.tumblr.com. I'll link to that in the show notes too. All the links in all the show notes. I'm just going to read an excerpt. She says, "Guard Scars was my first Pratchett book and my introduction to the amazing universe of Discworld. As a lifelong fan of fantasy novels and British humor, this book was the perfect mashup of absurdist genre. This book, above all, is a fun, interesting insight into the human heart and pathos, and has dragons. What more could you want from a book? The best part to me were the random and very much appreciated anachronisms. Insults, sayings, and observations clearly taken from the modern world to be used very freely in conversations by the characters. It helped make clear this book was a satire on both fantasy genre and modern life. I'm happy this was my first taste of Discworld, and I can't wait for more."
You did the thing!
I'm always nervous to introduce people to Discworld. The series has meant so much to me over the last 12 years or so that I just want people to love it. And it's not like, you know, if you didn't, I would be like, well, we can't be friends anymore. Maybe only a little bit. But it's important to me that this is a thing, you know?
No, I totally get it. I always hope that people will like the thing that I like.
Not everything is for everyone. But when you feel so strongly about something, you kind of want it to be for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, we've all been there, especially when something touches you that deeply. It kind of breaks your little heart when someone doesn't like the thing. But Sue, I like the thing.
I'm so glad you like the thing. I kind of knew you would like the thing.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. In general, especially with television and movies, I tend to consider myself much more of a science fiction fan than a fantasy fan. Mm-hmm. But the books that I cling to like this are very clearly fantasy.
I think it's also because it's satire. Because you also like laughing.
That is true. And that I do think that has a lot to do with it. But all of the funny books I have are pretty much fantasy books. Maybe it's easier to be satirical in fantasy, but to make social comments in science fiction.
I don't know.
Because there's a lot of social commentary in science fiction. But I feel like maybe it's just in the stuff I've read. I feel like it's not quite as funny. It's more mm-hmm. like all the aliens are going to kill you.
Sci-fi comedy is done right. It's done really well. Looking at you, Hitchhiker's Guide. What are we talking about next time?
I was going to ask you that.
God damn it.
Next time on Anomaly Supplemental, we are actually having another episode from Sarah. She is continuing her Babylon 5 series. So she will be talking about season 4, but she has decided to, because there's a lot to talk about in Babylon 5, break that into two parts. So the next episode, later in July, will be Babylon 5 season 4 part 1.
And after that, we are planning to talk about the Into the Woods movie, which is the follow-up of the Into the Woods podcast we did one or two years back about the original cast recording and just the play in general. So,
and hopefully we're going to get Angela to come and talk with us on that episode as well.
Because she has actually been in the production at least once or twice.
So, if you have thoughts on Guards Guard, did you read it? Did we make you want to read it? Why haven't you read it yet? Or Into the Woods, what you thought of the movie, whether or not you've seen the movie, whether you refuse to see the movie, whether you love the movie, or really anything. Anything we've talked about, anything you think we should talk about, we love to hear from you. And Meds, at the end of the show, will tell you how to contact us. If there is a social network out there, we are on it. Pretty much as Anomaly Podcast.
Also, sometimes we participate in hashtag wars with other sci-fi entities. For example, we recently did one about fake sci-fi facts, which I quoted one of my own at the beginning of this episode.
You killed it.
It was really fun. I really enjoy those kinds of hashtag wars.
And I think that is it for us today. I'm Sue.
I'm Casey.
And this has been Anomaly Supplemental. You've got a lot of books to read, Casey.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z. @gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ Anomaly Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at MarionCall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast. World is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I am
have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fit and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
So,
I want to talk more about that, but I don't want to spoil you.
Keep it inside. Keep it inside.
Okay, guys, once we're through this door, it's Defeat the Dragon and Claim the Sword of the Mythcreant podcast.
I've got my plot shield equipped.
Magic missile ready.
Why are we on a spaceship?
It's my shield. Force field. It has +2 to plot convenience.
And we're conveniently on the USS Mythcreant podcast.
Convenient? We're headed towards an alien armada.
Readying the improbability drive.
The shields are down 50%. I'm not sure we can survive another moral analogy.
Oh, now what?
It's a graveyard. Is it just me, or is this world a bit inconsistent?
Spooky fog, full moon, empty mansion. It's genre consistent, anyway.
Here lies the Mythcreant podcast. May its speculative fiction madness never again threaten the world of men?
I want to go back to the dragon.
World of men? That's kind of sexist, isn't it?
Yeah, there are other options for efficient gender-neutral pronoun use.
I have no idea what you just said.
We'll just have to dig up the podcast and find out.
Wait. There's a bit of fine print here.
On a gravestone?
A podcast analyzing aspects of fantasy, science fiction, and horror. Downloadable from mythgreens.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio.
Come on, guys. These Eldritch grave seals aren't going to break themselves.
Maybe you shouldn't do that.
Tuning into Sci-Fi TV. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Brent Barrett.
I'm Kevin Batchelder.
I'm Wendy Hembrock.
The Viewer's Guide to Genre Television.
Welcome, everyone, to a special supernatural-focused bonus
Hello, everyone,
show.
And welcome to The Fae Files,
a family of podcasts for the genre-loving television viewer.
Welcome to Saturday B Movie Reel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Study
welcome
Group.
Welcome to the top genre characters of all-time countdown.
And tonight, we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones Season 3.
Find us at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.